You're listening to the official podcast of Asbury University, produced by students with God-honoring conversations that inform, edify, and encourage. This is Asbury. We explore culture and current topics through a Christian worldview, promoting a well-balanced life, and we empower our community to belong, become, and be set apart. I'm your host, Abby Laub. Welcome to This is Asbury.
Well, welcome to This is Asbury. My name is Professor Rob Lim, and it's wonderful to welcome you to this episode. I feel extremely honoured this episode to welcome a friend. Some of you might be wondering, well, this guy is sounding different to my normal host with the American accent. And those of you that I know, the Australian accent is real. But it's wonderful to have a fellow Australian accent join me today, my friend Mark Sayers, who is a leader in the Australian church world. He runs a community called Red. Some of you may know him from the many books he's written and the podcast that he's hosted, but I'm very grateful for Mark visiting us today at Asbury for this episode. Welcome, Mark, to the episode.
Oh, it's great to be part of the Australian takeover of Asbury.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. It feels a little bit unusual because usually you're the person hosting podcasts, and I remember going to your studio in Australia, and now the roles are kind of flipped.
Yeah, we were in very similar, the soundproofing and the equipment, but yeah, great to be here doing this in the US.
Great. And by the way, first impressions on Asbury. This is the first time you've been to Kentucky, isn't it?
First time to Kentucky. Yeah, I get the bluegrass thing flying in as a unique hue to the grass, and yeah, beautiful. Like, I think I've been taken in by the just natural beauty of the area. Is, yeah, not what I expected. I don't know what I expected, but it's really pleasant.
Does it remind you of home in any way?
No, it's as completely different to home. As you could imagine. Yeah.
And how about Asbury itself? You've probably, I know you've definitely heard a lot about Asbury, the university, and first impressions coming on campus. We've had you speak at chapel as well earlier today. What are your thoughts?
Well, it's interesting because we both toured in Australia, and, you know, you had a team of you and some other people from Asbury come and testify to what happened during the outpouring. And so I'd seen the video, which was played before every time we did one of those events. So I've seen the video of the inside the building, but it's always different to actually be in person in a place. So, yeah, it was just a real privilege to actually be here and be sharing, and everyone's been just really friendly. And, yeah, it's a real delight to be here.
Brilliant. It's been a pleasure seeing a friend who's here. I've talked a lot about Asbury with you back home in Australia, and seeing you in person here has been a little bit surreal for me too. So it's good to have you, mate. Now, today's episode will be centered on the topic of the outpouring. But before our listeners jump to conclusions that, oh, they're going to reflect on what happened at Asbury, I'm actually wanting to direct us towards occurrences of the outpouring which are occurring in different parts of the world. Mark, earlier he alluded to the fact that in summer 2024, he and I and a few others, we toured around Australia, really giving testimony to what God had done at Asbury, and also talking about aspects of outpouring and revival, and witnessed something quite extraordinary. But I want us as listeners to take pause and to recognise that the outpouring that has been much and well documented here is actually occurring in different places in the world, and how can we hear about it, learn about it, and use it to even guide us in how we step forward into what God is doing today. So, Mark, on that note, Australia, faraway land, it's in the Bible, the ends of the earth.
Distant islands.
Lay it out for us. What's the context of that land, and how is outpouring relevant there?
Well, in 2017, I felt a real stirring to begin to pray for awakening. And I think part of that came from the fact that, you know, Australia is a post-Christian country. You could even argue at different points that, you know, it was post-Christian even from very close to its inception. You know, it was founded by the British Empire trying to get rid of a lot of its sort of lower classes through being convicts here. So you had convicts, you had British soldiers who were being punished. You had a lot of women who'd been caught in sort of sex work who were being brought out. And then you had the indigenous population. And, you know, this was, you know, not your typical environment as you find it in Europe.
Mm.
You know, Australia, America starts as a utopia, attempt to create utopia with, you know, the pilgrims. Australia starts as a dystopia, you know. Mm. And so it has a very different sort of connection to faith. The first church in Australia was burnt down. The government built a science center before it built a church. And so, you know, this is just, you know, we've had moments of outpouring. You know, we had some outpourings and awakenings at the beginning of the 20th century when Billy Graham came. It was a moment in, I think it was 1958 or 1959. And, but, you know, in 2017, all that seemed in the past. Mm. You know, you have a much smaller church in Australia and just this antipathy towards faith. But also, too, just an incredibly comfortable country. Australians, you know, are considered the second sort of wealthiest person, you know, with sort of means tested in the world and just a place of safety. You know, the government provides all kinds of things. You've got the best of both worlds. You've got healthcare and you've got sort of an economy which is thriving. And so I just felt very, despite everything being so great, I just felt despondent spiritually because it was so comfortable and so easy to not be a Christian. And you felt always the lure of the world drawing people away. And so in the midst of this, I just began to just pray that God would move. And really that prayer remained unanswered for some time. And then we had the shock of COVID. Melbourne was in a very long lockdown. And this really, I think, pulled the rug out from under a lot of our sense of comfort. And, you know, many churches went through difficulty coming out of COVID. And there was a lot of interpersonal stuff. We didn't have the political polarization we did in the States here. But you just saw this disruption mean that a lot of people couldn't rely on what worked before. And so, you know, we sort of came out of this and you just felt that things were changing. And so when Asbury happened, I've described it, it was almost like a flare going off in a darkened sea. You see it instantly took your imagination and it expanded our faith because, like, if something like this can happen in the 21st century in a Western country, like we hear of stories, like I've been really encouraged by the church in Iran, what God's doing there. You hear those stories outside the West, but to see an outpouring happening in the West was hugely encouraging. But I think also it was the nature of the outpouring as well, that it happened in a place which a lot of Aussies hadn't heard of. You know, it wasn't at the biggest mega church or the biggest amazing conference. And the humble sort of remaining low, confessional, deep devotion sense of the awakening. So, yeah, we heard about it. I got a text from a friend who was here. She'd flown in. Sarah Brule texted my wife, actually, and said, you know, you guys have got to come. And we prayed about it. Do we get on a plane? I have other friends who jumped on planes. But we really felt the Lord saying, no, press in where you are. So we just started meeting at our church. We met about four times. And on the fourth time, just in this very no agenda, no frills environment, we felt something very similar to what happened here, this outpouring of God's presence, his peace, his very quiet but heavy, heavy sense of, you know, just repentant call, like a repentant call. And it was transforming for people in my church. And we began to see waves of this happen in our services. Our service were interrupted. And we began to talk about this on our podcast, Rebuilders. And we started getting like messages from around Australia, unlikely places, country town churches where no one had come to faith in years and all of a sudden they're baptizing multiple people. The Spirit moving in unlikely places, and not just Australia but New Zealand, you know, South Africa, Southeast Asia, Central Europe, like the UK. So I think for those who perhaps part of this community who are not aware, it really was that flare which fired but then inspired so many others. And when, you know, you guys came out and toured in Australia and testified, I thought it would be people coming out to hear what happened at Asbury. But so much of that tour was actually people saying, yeah, we want to hear what happened at Asbury, but we also want to tell you what's been happening with us. So that's a long answer, but there is something happening in the world and it's bigger than just what happened here. And we celebrate what happened here, but it feels like not a looking back, it feels like a looking forward to what God is doing now.
It's no doubt for those that haven't been to Australia, hearing that there are aspects of the outpouring manifesting there in its own unique way is greatly encouraging. And but Mark, as you heard about, maybe cast your time back to when you first heard about the outpouring, what were the aspects of the outpouring that caught your imagination?
Yeah. Well, I think number one, was the human. It wasn't hype. You know, that's what caught my eye. If it was a big whiz-bang conference and it was at the crescendo of, you know, an amazing worship song and it was all the biggest names there and it was, there'd be an element where I'd be cautiously watching it. But there was something in the reports of the outpouring, and we did this episode on our podcast with Pete Gregg, the founder of 24/7 Prayer, who'd just been here and he went straight back to his hotel room and we jumped online with him and interviewed him. And just hearing his accounts, and maybe also that's us as non-Americans wanting to, you know, hear like what as a non-American's impression of it. And, you know, he just testified to, you know, it just its nature. And I think that episode went viral. So many people reached out to us. And I think it was the humility, the sort of leaderless nature, but I know there was sort of leadership behind, but it wasn't a platformed leadership. It wasn't around a singular charismatic personality. It was lo-fi. You know, I remember Pete Gregg had some – he had some great – Pete Gregg's got a fantastic turn of phrase, but he had these sort of lines like, you know, it was almost an analog experience for a generation who's overdosed on the digital, something like that. And all of this I think just caught not only our attention but so many other people's attention in the sense of like, this is what we're hungering for, but we didn't realize it. You know, it was an antidote to, in some ways, the poison of the age. So all of this, I think, captured the attention of, and even the Gen Z or Gen Z, as you say here, element of it. A lot of people, the narrative up to that point was almost like the next generation's a write-off. They're so entrapped by, you know, social media and nihilism and hopelessness. So to hear this good news story was just very powerful.
And as you've gone around Australia and other parts and no doubt witnessed firsthand evidence of outpourings occurring in other parts of the world, what are you making of it as you observe this? And I know we're all connecting the dots here and as a people of God trying to understand what is God doing, but what are your high-level thoughts at this stage?
Yeah. Well, I think number one, so often we understand how God's moved in history through the lens of history. And historically, events will be looked back on and interpreted. And it's very different when you're in the midst of something. So I think the first thing I've realized is we're in the midst of something. It's unfurling. We don't understand its full shape. And we might not for some time. My sense is that something is happening. It's the beginning of something. My other sense is, you know, I read a book called Reappearing Church, which came out in 2019, and it was really me sort of like exploring what could renewal, outpouring, awakening look like in a secular age. And, you know, one of the things is I noticed as I read renewal history or revival history that people often were agonized in the question of, am I saved? If you look at the Hebridean revival, it was in a deeply Presbyterian context in Scotland, and people were deeply religious, but it hadn't always penetrated their heart. And they would come together, I think it was like once a year for communion, and it was a very solemn communion that only those who knew they were sort of saved could come and take. And this created this crisis amongst them, and they were agonized over whether they were really saved. So when Duncan Campbell comes in and preaches this salvation message, they respond. And I thought, you know, I'm not meeting an average Australian unchurched person who's wandering the street saying, agonizing as to whether they're saved. But I do think that the average person in the world today is agonized increasingly. So one of my little sort of catchphrases I put in that book was, you know, crisis precedes renewal. And I remember saying this. And really interestingly in, you know, and I think this is more the Holy Spirit than my nous. But in Reappearing Church, I had this line like, what if, this is 2019, what if a global flu pandemic came and devastated the world like the 1919 Spanish flu, how would we respond? We wouldn't have a way of responding that. And then little did I know, 1 year later, that would happen. And, you know, we've had the crisis of, you know, globally we've had, you know, COVID, which was one of the first times we had a global experience that everyone experienced simultaneously. You know, we've had war return to Europe. We have economic challenges. We have all kinds of political crises, social crises in many countries. We have justice movements around race or gender or all kinds of things, economics rising in the world. And so we're not just in a crisis, we're in a sort of cascade of crises. And so I do think that God is I'm not saying he causes these things, but he'll often allow us to be humbled through these things. And I think also there's been crises in the church as well, whether it's the sort of crises that our best smarts and best production is not solving how to do church and secularism. If it had, we would have done that long ago. And I feel like, in a sense, what COVID did is it created a remnant within the church that are very different, you know, different backgrounds. But what unites them is a hunger to see God move and a coming to the end of ourselves. And, yeah, so my sense is we're in the midst of something. God is moving. It's linked to a humbling. It's linked to how do we actually reach a world which is, you know, not just secularizing the West. You know, there's large parts of the world, like places like Korea, South Korea, Japan is secularizing. China has secularized in a way. Secularization is hitting much of the world, or forms of it. And so, you know, I think that God is renewing his church for the challenge to come. And I think we're at this axial moment. So I want to step into it. My sense is when I wrote Reappearing Church, I was happy for me to never see anything, but almost wrote that book for my kids to hopefully see something. I'm now like, something is happening now. We need to be attuned to it. But it's not, we celebrate what happened here, and I'm so excited to be here. But my what God's shown me is this is big and bigger than what just happened here at Asbury.
I just get this sense of, as you described all of that, the differences that were so apparent across society and in the church, whether it's denominationally, tradition, persuasion, political persuasion, whatever, a common denominator was put in place through the Spirit, especially in recent times. And no doubt you've been contending, many people have been contending, we've probably got many listeners from different parts of the US and the world that have been contending for their particular society. But you are now also moving into this posture of not only contending but also stewarding. And what thoughts do you have on that? Especially as I'm sure there are people listening to this that have been impacted by the outpouring across various parts of the US, and some of them are leaders themselves shifting into this posture of stewardship. How do you handle that? How do you do it well?
Yeah. Well, I think it's very apt that, you know, we're having this conversation in a institution which comes out of, and really its roots, you could trace back to John Wesley and the awakening that he was part of, you know. In 2018, my wife and I went to London and we prayed at a number of sites of renewal. And I remember being in Wesley's little bedroom and he's got his little prayer kneeler, you know, and just thinking, my goodness, the prayers that were knelt there rippled around the world and changed the world. And there are often, you know, great revivals. The Welsh revival was this incredible revival. There's someone in my church who I can't remember, I think it was a grandfather, was at a station in Wales and the Holy Spirit fell on him at a station and, you know, he was, you know, touched by the Lord there. But interestingly, today Wales is one of the more unchurched parts of the United Kingdom. So you can have incredibly intense outpourings that are like a flash grenade. They go off, they create a big bang and a loud flash and catch everyone's attention, but then they pass. But looking at Wesley, really the awakening that sort of emerged out of, you know, what God was doing with him and other people, Whitfield, and, you know, really was happening in multiple places. It rippled through the globalized world at that time. The world was undergoing a kind of globalization, was being connected by shipping and trade. And you know, the fact that in Australia there's a little Methodist chapel near my house, you know, that's amazing. That's the other side of the world from where he knelt and prayed. So I think Wesley, when you look at him, there was the fire, you know, fire fell at Aldersgate, but there was also organization. There was presence and program. There was, in his societies, in his classes, there was a deep discipleship. There was a very much a missional evangelistic element, but a social transformational element to it as well. So I think like balance is a really interesting key, you know, and I've even been thinking like for our church, like if we just every week pressed into more and more presence every single week, I think we would become lopsided. There is increasingly at home, we're just finding an evangelistic openness in people. So there needs to be an evangelistic element, you know. There needs to be it flowing into the marketplace, into education, into communities. But there also needs to be the discipleship as well. I'm always struck by, you know, Wesley would preach to, I don't know, 20,000 people in Newcastle.
Mm.
But then you read, you know, his sort of like diaries and he talks about, but then 70 people or something joined the society. So I think he realized that there were these amazing moments of preaching the word and the spirit falling, but that had to go down this discipleship pipeline for real transformation. And I remember seeing also on that trip when we visited his chapel in East London, there was the kneeler, but there was also the classroom as well. And so I think that stewarding this is an invitation back into thinking that way. What if God is really moving with us? What if our expectations around secularism, you know, the narrative's being rewritten and God can move in this time? But how do we steward this well? How do we think well? And I think, you know, there was the plaque you showed me before here at Asbury near the Wesley statue of the, you know, the mind shaped at Oxford, but the heart strangely warmed at Aldersgate. And I think that's a great balance to help guide us forward as we steward this.
Mm-hmm. They're good reminders. And even as we have this chat in university, even just a reminder, I think, to students that may think they're in a non-ministerial track, or those of us that are listening that are not in vocational ministry, the power of the ordinary. And I note that word there that you don't often hear in parallel with outpouring and revival. You noted the administrative gift that that Wesley held, and something so ordinary that we would usually isolate to the world of the secular was actually, in some sense, a charisma that was used to, in a very ordinary sense, to help structure and steward what God was doing.
Mm.
So just want to highlight that point that Mark made. Mm. So as no doubt you're witnessing things, God moving in particular ways in Australia, and you discuss the ways to steward this for longevity. But no doubt there are things to watch out for. This is still a spiritual tussle that we're in.
Yeah, 100%.
And what are some of the things that you've read, studied, or even practicing around girding yourself appropriately, not out of fear, but in a way to steward this with diligence?
Mm. Well, the thing I've realized is that the enemy does not like outpouring. And I think almost like the enemy's prime position is for people just to be frozen and inactive. Like when you're not a threat to the enemy, you know, he's happy. But then as soon as the Spirit is poured out and the people of God start moving, there's different counterattacks. One will just be a frontal assault. And, you know, I've just marked in many of the people who have been stepping into this have experienced significant spiritual warfare. We've experienced that in really profound ways. And that's, again, not to scare people, but just to also the devil prowls. The scriptures tell us that, you know, be wary. Praying, covering ourselves in you know, Jesus's blood, just like protecting, you know, there is a spiritual battle here. You know, I often think about, you know, on the edge of, you know, there's the classic Celtic, you know, Christian movement which re-evangelized Europe, you know, and there were guys who were praying, these green martyrs praying on the edge of Ireland to protect Europe spiritually. They saw that it was a battle against powers and principalities, not just flesh.
Mm.
So I think that's number one. I think also what the enemy will do is that once there's movement, almost like a judo practitioner, once an energy begins, the enemy will want to take it into an extreme, you know. And, you know, if you look at the Second Great Awakening, a lot of sects and cults and heretical impulses began. And so often in the wake of awakening, you know, like after the Welsh Revival, there's people going to theosophy and spiritualism, praying to spirits and this sort of stuff. So once there's a spiritual energy, it can go into crazy directions.
Mm.
A spirit of religiosity can come in as well. That's another thing that often happens where we forget that the lesson of the outpouring is that we can't do it, God can, and that we're empowered. So we start to just rely on human power to keep something going that may go beyond the time that God has for it. So a religious fervor that's not of God can really, I think, emerge in the wake of something like this. Cynicism can be another thing as well, a sense of this is breaking our boundaries and categories of how we thought God would work, so we resist it. And you see people like Finney and so on who just had tremendous reactions from the church. You know, and again, in the Hebrides, you know, the people who stopped talking to each other in these very small villages because of just sort of reaction to what God was doing. So I think there's multiple traps, and sort of walking that tightrope seems daunting. But I think what it does is it invites us back into just step by step with the Holy Spirit, you know, walking with Jesus leading. You know, that's the invitation at moments like this.
Mm-hmm. I might even draw another one, which I know we've had a chat on previously, but one of the other things revivals call upon to keep ourselves on that tightrope is community.
Yes.
And having fellow brothers and sisters that we can lean on, iron sharpens iron, for not only encouragement but correction, but obviously relationship that's girded by humility and open to open to honest conversations with those around us. But I appreciate that analogy of the tightrope. It reminds me of the ridgeline that we've heard David Thomas mention often. So, Mark, this contending and stewarding, which seems to be occurring now across Australia and in the States, for those listeners that have not seen what the Lord is doing globally, and what word of encouragement do you want to give people here?
Yeah.
So is it something that, look, we just have to stick to our own bases, steward what we're doing within our jurisdictions that the Lord has called us in? Or as someone that's within the global church that leads various parts of the global church, what do you see as a way forward?
Well, I mean, again, doing a podcast has been a really humbling thing because we put out content, but then we get these messages back. And it became very clear to me that out there, there was a tremendous amount of people who were part of almost this remnant, which I think is a really operative word. And God was turning up, stuff was happening, or they were just hungry for outpouring. Yet they thought they were the only one. And it was almost like them emailing us because they heard what we were talking about. And so is this the whole church? No. You know, you could come to many churches in Australia and, like, nothing's happening, you know. Same here in the States, you know. But I think it's like a community of – like, I feel like God seeded the world with renewal and he's raising people. I felt like – really felt the Lord say in 2019 that he's pulling down platforms but he's raising, you know, new people. But it's different. It's not like it was before. So it's not going to be singular charismatic personalities. It's almost a crowdsourced, you know, awakening. And so, you know, I feel that for people here, recognizing that their story has been of great encouragement, but it was interesting a comment you made that, you know, when you came to testify in Australia, you also found yourself encouraged by what's happening in Australia. You said that to me. And I thought, oh, that's really interesting. That's not what I expected. And, you know, I think that remembering the story you have to tell, remembering that's not the end of the story, it's possibly the beginning of a story, but then also that that story encourages others, but also to open our ears to the story. You know, Marshall McLuhan talked about a global village, and I think it's true. He had many layers to what he meant by that. But we don't live in a time in history. Like, we could hear about the awakening in real time on social media devices as it was happening. We are connected in the world. And that creates a level of connection in the global church that we've not seen before. But we can also live in our silos as well, you know. And I think I know there's a lot of people, particularly in the US, who feel a sense of discouragement about the church. But when you have a global perspective, I think it changes, you know. And I think that there's a really good news story that God is telling in the world.
No, they're good words. And in some ways it's the plurality. I'm trying to get my head around that word. Plurality of testimony, isn't it?
Yes.
And it reminds me how, look, we can't God is so grand, great. We can't get full visualization of everything he's doing around the world by one person.
No.
But through the collective body of the church, we can hear aspects of what he's doing amongst his people. Mm-hmm. And it kind of really resonates with me, that verse in Revelation 7:9, every people, tribe and tongue. Mm-hmm. And we have every people and tribe and tongue testifying to what God is doing from there. From their perspective, it does edify the church collectively. It does glorify God singly. Mm. And so that does serve as great encouragement. I'm going to center it now in our closing comments now. specifically on the Asbury University community. You have been encouraged by what happened here, but also how the people here responded, how it was stewarded, how it was done in a posture of humility. What would your wording of encouragement be as a global church leader to Asbury University in light of what is happening around the world? You know, with things happening here and no doubt where you are serving too, there's this tension of how do I not get ahead of myself? How do I hold the posture of humility? But how do I also not neglect the position of testifying? What would your words to Asbury University be?
Yeah. Well, the thing I'll sort of speak prophetically in both senses of the word. One thing, you know, for many years I've come to the United States and have developed a, you know, deep love for the people and always just feel so welcomed here. One thing I have noted is a sense where something happens, someone writes a great book or a great worship song, or a church has a moment where God seems to be touching it, or this leader seems to be have a gift at a moment or something like this. And almost there's this instinct to leverage it into something bigger, you know, that it's like a rich vein that then must be almost monetized, multiplied. And I think part of perhaps what God looked favorably upon, you know, poured his spirit on Asbury, and I think God is still moving, is I think there was a sense where you guys didn't leverage it. And even in a sense of response to the media, there was there's a parallel path that could have been taken, which wasn't of, right, let's leverage this into the next thing. That was a real possibility. And I think God honored by that not happening. Continuing to walk in that path is really key, because that is so countercultural. And to be really honest, because, you know, we're fellow Aussies, we can be straight shooters. I think that spoke to the global church. You know, if all of a sudden, you know, we were getting the, I don't know, Asbury Experience theme park to come and come and sort of like play homage to, I think that because that hasn't happened, that spoke to people like, we would say in Australia, it was fair dinkum, meaning that this was authentic. So I think that the outpouring was God pouring out his sovereign grace, because also this is, I think, is a thin place. There's a history here of different moves of God. I think it was 1970 that was, you know, similar. And you can take it all the way back to Francis Asbury, you know, going way back. And I think God turns up in places where he's been honored and people have followed him and devotedly. That means you may be in a town or a church where that hasn't happened, but you can be the first in a long Lincoln chain. So I feel like there's something to steward and honor here, but I think maybe the next thing is, how do you walk this out? How do you steward it in the ordinary? I think the world's attention can be gotten by the spectacular for a moment. All the social media can zero in the algorithm on one event, and that happened with the outpouring. It was a mass event. But I think now, what does that look like in the lives of students? What does that look like in a university where this happened? And again, too, that's the Wesleyan tradition. Aldersgate was beautiful and amazing. The spirit fell. I've stood there. You're standing in this plaque in London next to some sort of office building. But I think what changed the world was then how it was walked out in all spheres. And that's my encouragement. Walk it out well.
Oh, they're great words. And I've been to that point as well, where the Aldersgate Chapel stood and now it's a large plaque.
Yes.
In the shape of a flame, I believe. And whilst people, one perspective would be, it's been an absolute tragedy to see such an important spiritual site removed and replaced with office buildings. In some sense, prophetically, that is actually probably what God wants. That the place where his spirit fell has been not idolized, but turned into a place of ordinary reflection, which hopefully will stir the hearts of people that operate there. Mark Sayers, been a privilege having you here, mate.
That's been wonderful.
We need to make sure we get you back here again.
Yeah, I'd love to come back.
Hope you enjoyed this episode with two Aussies online. Mark Sayers from Australia. Bless you, mate.
Thank you.
Well, thank you so much for joining us for this episode of This is Asbury. To learn more about Asbury University, visit asbury.edu.